I'm Darius Larson. I'm pastor at University Lutheran Church of the Epiphany in St. Cloud, Minnesota, where everyone is welcome. I have a sign, a billboard here to prove it. And today's session is a continuation of our session on Genesis, Children of Eden. And today we look at Cain and Abel, so I've subtitled this session, The Killing Field. Let us pray. Dear God, be with us today as we celebrate life in birthdays, as we remember death, the death of Abel, the first death in the Bible, as we remember the death of hundreds of thousands in Hiroshima. There are killing fields all over this world, dear God. Help us gain insights this hour. And why do people kill? And help us be peacemakers. Amen. This is one of the most haunting stories in Scripture, I think. No one gets off easy. God plays favorites. Cain is hot-headed. And Abel does a good thing and suffers from it. Adam and Eve, as Bill Moyer says, learns what it means to, how does he say it? Learns what it means to raise Cain. This chapter moves from, in verse 1, a portrait of a very stable family to unresolved alienation in verse 16, in 16 short verses. It's the first death in the Bible, and it's the first murder in the Bible. One of my most favorite books in the whole world is by Nicholas Kazantzakis, Zorba the Greek. And Zorba is this free-spirited Greek person, and Boss, which is the other main character in the book, is a bookworm who just reads and reads and reads and reads. There's one scene in the book where Zorba's best friend dies. And Zorba comes to Boss and says, "Why do people die? Why does anybody die? What's the use of all your goddamn books? If they can't tell me that, what the hell do they tell you?" And Boss answers, "They tell me of the agony of people who cannot answer questions like those." Chapter 4 of Genesis is such a book. And Mindy is back. And turn your Bibles to chapter 4 and we can listen to the reading of it.
God sent Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden. They joined together, and Eve gave birth to Cain, who became a worker of the soil, and then to Abel, who grew up to be a shepherd of the flocks. In time, Cain made an offering to the Lord of fruit from the ground, and Abel brought the firstborn of his flock with its fullness and fat. The Lord respected Abel's gift, but had no regard for Cain's. And Cain was angry, and his face fell. And the Lord said, "Why are you so upset? If you do well, you will be accepted. But if you don't do right, sin is waiting for you by your door, and sin will want you, but you can conquer it." One day when the brothers were in the field, Cain rose up against Abel and killed him. The Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" And Cain replied, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" And God said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are cursed. You are cursed from the earth which opened her mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the soil, you'll get next to nothing. You will be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. Cain said to God, my punishment is greater than I can bear. I am banished from the face of the earth and from the face of God. I will wander without purpose, and whoever finds me will try to kill me. But God said to Cain, I promise, anyone who kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over. And the Lord set a mark on Cain, so that whoever came upon him would not strike him down. And Cain went away from the presence of the Lord, dwelling in the land of Nod, wandering east of Eden. And Cain took a wife. They had a son named Enoch. And Cain built a city. His descendants had cattle. Some played the pipe and the organ, and were the fathers of the players of the lyre, and some worked with bronze and iron. And Adam and Eve had another son named Seth. For God, said Eve, has given us another son in place of Abel.
All throughout the book of Genesis, what I have written back here on the board is so true, and it's really true here too, that there is no major character in Genesis that achieves any sort of signs of success without being fully dependent on God. Cain could not succeed anywhere without that dependence upon God. My problem is, lots of times in Genesis, and especially here, God isn't what at least Lutherans teach God to be. God doesn't come off as a nice, nurturing, caring, loving, forgiving, accepting God. In fact, if we look at this, we find that it is God who instigates some of these things, that starts the wheels in motion. What do you think Cain is guilty?
When you talk about depending, you mean approval? That Cain needs that God for that?
No, not so much approval. I think that the whole book of Genesis puts up people, characters, that just cannot get anywhere without trusting in God, because God, the worse the person is, the more they need to trust in God. If Abel would have survived this story, and if Abel would have been, quote, the hero of the story, and this is Lutheran, we might say, oh, being nice, being good, being helpful, doing all the right things is what makes a Christian, or what makes a holy person. But what Genesis says is what makes a holy person is your dependency on God. That's what I think. That's my summation, which I thought I should get one of these days up here. So, we were going to try, but I didn't think we could pull it off. I was going to divide all of you up in this 1 hour to put Cain on trial. And I was going to have all the... How many firstborn are there here? I'm just kind of curious. All the firstborn would be Cain, and I'll push you all over there. All the secondborn would be Abel, and I'll push you over there. And all the rest would be the jurors.
And you're going to be God, right?
No. I'll be God's representative. But I had another judge in mind who probably knows legal proceedings a little better than I do. But if you were the prosecutor, what would you think? What would you think you would charge Cain with?
Manslaughter.
Why?
Murder. Because I think it happened the same way I hit my sister with a broom. I think that...
with the same results?
I think there was taunting. I think there was more to it than just the end result.
Okay.
I like Madeline Engels. She talks about that story. She says, well, Cain can say, but God, I was deprived of my parents' love. They loved my brother better than they loved me. But God, I had some excuse.
Oh, yes. You have lots of excuses. It's kind of like Adam and Eve revisited here. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
There's an interesting textual variant here in verse 8. Cain said to his brother Abel, let us go out to the field. And there's a footnote that says that's missing from some texts. and it wasn't on tape. And that changes manslaughter to premeditated murder.
Yeah, was it an act of just impulsive rage, or was it premeditated?
I have trouble in understanding why God did not accept Cain's offering. Cain offered what he had, the best of what he had, but what he had wasn't good enough because he worked in the field.
We're not quite sure. There's big debate on whether or not God just likes meat and is not a vegetarian, or whether or not Cain just picked up something from his field and it wasn't the best. It doesn't say it was the best enough. We know that Abel's was the best. It doesn't say whether, we don't know that. So what's this kind of... you know, it wasn't any state fair blue ribbon produce, whereas the lamb was. We know that. So that's we can speculate there. The word, yes.
And that could reflect the attitude of their hearts that God could see.
Could very well be. However, Cain gets a bum rap here because Cain is the one who invents religion here. The first sacrifice, it was Cain's idea. Cain wanted, here's Adam and Eve who used to walk and talk with God. And Cain says, hey, I think we can do that too. Let's call on God. Let's give a sacrifice to God. That's, in the early days, that's what religion was all about. That was, you know, religion was invented here by Cain. And if it wasn't for Abel, Cain thinks, God maybe would have accepted my sacrifice. I would be the blessed one. God would have liked mine. It's Abel's fault. Not that whatever I gave, not the fruit I gave, or not a fool in what I am, but once again, like Adam and Eve, pointing fingers here. The word Cain means to get to create. Here you have the firstborn, and most of you are firstborn, it seems like, here. All hopes and expectations of parents are vested in you. And boy, when you don't shape up, what sort of disappointment you bring to your parents. And here we have God telling Cain, hey, you don't measure up. You don't measure up. This was kind of a happy family. You could at least say there wasn't, you can't find any stress or strain in this story until who instigates the conflict here?
Yahweh,
Lord God. Yes, my Lord. For you on the tape, the light just flickered on. And I think you're leaning against the light switch over there. So don't play God with me. There's a plug-in light right there. That just, I don't care if it's on or off, but I don't want it to flicker. It makes me nervous. God. The eldest doesn't come off very well at all in the book of Genesis. You have Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, Esau. They don't come off very well. It's the second. I'm the second. My brother is the Cain and I'm the Abel. Unless you want to understand what the word Abel means, almost every commentary I pick up has a different definition of the word. I mean, you get the drift, though. They all come up mean the same. Abel means nothingness, futility, or the one I like, vapor. Puff of air, without possibility of life. Cain has possibility of life. Abel, you can't even see if Abel doesn't even speak a word in this. Abel is a prop just to take on Cain's rage and anger. And sometimes I felt like that with my brother. And your sister must have felt like when you took the broom after her.
Absolutely know that story.
You came in late, huh? She admitted it. Yes, we all know it now, and it's on tape for generations upon generations. I don't think it means that God likes meat and doesn't like fruit. I don't think this is an issue about carnivores and vegetarians. I don't think this is an issue, but you can see how these stories develop between farmers and shepherds. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that frustration in there. But I really think this story, one overplay, is about sibling rivalry. And how do we learn to exist with each other? I tell people in premarital counseling, I ask you basically one question in 1,000 different ways. How do you love when you're madder than hell at the other person? And when there's rage going on, how do you love then? It's easy to love when you're in love. And Cain here, I think, somebody told me there's a Rage Anonymous group starting up now. There's a Rage Everything, something anonymous for everything. But there are people who do have rage, uncontrollable rage, and they're scary people. And I accused Ted Peters this morning in the first session. What does this mean that the first being created, not from God's direct act, but between human and human, which is Cain, has a genetic predisposition to violence? Is a murderer, and the second person is his victim. If we want to follow all this through, what does that say about all of us? What does it say about the human race? Hiroshima, and all the other atrocities that happen. It may be in all of our genes, and what do we do about this is part of the struggle. I mean, I am Cain, even though I'm the second son. And I don't like to think about that. But unless we think about that, we may act on those impulses. Who gets hurt here? When we say the trouble comes from not from Cain, but from God. And then whose feelings gets hurt when God speaks?
Cain.
How do you think Cain felt? Have any of you firstborn felt somewhat like Cain? Has your parents ever played favorites? Or weren't you ever that way? I see some nervous twitching.
Particularly when you have a parent here.
Oh! Okay, we will then move right on because children and parents are here in the same room. I guess we can't talk about that. We'll just keep to this text. Yes.
I was just going to say, more and more, I'm learning that children act out the dysfunction of their parents. And when Adam and Eve ate from the apple, and God came to them about it, Adam first said, Eve made me do it, she gave me the apple, so he didn't take responsibility.
Right, right.
Eve said, the serpent made me do it.
Right.
And the same thing happened when God came to Cain.
Mm-hmm.
Cain said, well, I don't know where he is. You know, so he failed to take responsibility. So maybe, and a lot of this was just Cain acting out what Adam and Eve had done. Mm-hmm.
It may be the only reality Cain knows. In fact, how does Cain even know? I mean, this is pure speculation here, but how does Cain even know that killing is wrong? It's never been done before. Is death bad? It's never been done before. Yes.
Well, and also, it was pointed out a long years ago to me that, and I'd never thought about that before, that how did he even know that that was going to be the result of his action?
Yes.
Was the death. because maybe it, and we don't know if there'd been other deaths anywhere, yeah. But I mean, this is the first one we're told about, but the, and so the really bad part in the first place was the hate, or whatever it was, the rage that he had. And he had no idea that it was going to result in that he was going to bong his brother, and poof, he was going to be gone.
I'll tell one story about myself. Well, it's really more about my brother, because I was the victim. I'll never forget the day that I says, Bob, if you really hate me that much, if you really want to get even with me, why don't you just do it now and get over with it? And I'm the able taunting here. And my brother, I was foolish enough to be standing at the top of the stairs, and my brother went, whack, hit me right here, and I rolled down the stairs. And both of us then realized the power that we each had. And I wonder if Abel, just out of that rage, out of that frustration, was it premeditated? I don't know. We don't have, you know, like most murder cases, no one's there. You don't have witnesses all the time, so we have wonderful speculations. But most murders are murders of passion, right? Just you know, that's why you don't keep guns in your houses, right? You just do these weird things, and later you have remorse. At least some do.
But I wonder whether we are making a mistake in even calling this a murder. We don't know that Cain invited Abel onto the field to hurt him.
Yeah, we really.
It might have been a pure accident.
Right.
As you just demonstrated, it might be that something that Abel brought on himself. We don't know that God had scolded Cain. He might have said, as you were suggesting, I prefer to plan this morning to ordeal. But if you bring in a good serving of oatmeal tomorrow, I may very well want that. If you do that and do it well, I'll like it.
Very true.
It may have been punishment, it may not. Wouldn't we be better off in trying to analyze this if we just said that Cain caused Cain? Now, whether or not that was accidental or not, maybe it's wrong in a way.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if Cain caused death and it was the result of Cain doing something to Abel, would that ever, can you still use the word murder there?
Yeah, murder. You know, that's
but there are degrees of what that means. I understand.
At least I don't remember anything in the text up at this point where God says don't kill people.
Right.
He says be productive and bring life onto the earth. And I can see that God would say, destroying life is not what I said. I said, create life
right.
And be reproductive.
There is that curious statement that God makes to Cain about sin. And I'm not sure whether there's been other conversations where God says, okay, this is sin, this is not sin. I mean, these folks don't have a lot of history as to what is sin and what is not.
Right.
Yeah, we're really scratching for definitions here because all we really have is the Adam and Eve event where God was displeased with the way that they behaved in the garden, but no great text yet on what constitutes sin.
Yeah. Here's some hand up over here. Or
I was going to make a similar point to the gentleman over there. I said, I think God gives Cain a warning. He says, you know, because of what you've done, you know, this wasn't right, do what's right. And he says, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. This what my text says.
Mm-hmm.
Read a little bit differently. I think that's a warning to Cain. I think he's, I heard some talk in the videotape yesterday about, you know, God setting up Adam and Eve. I don't know if this is a setup for Cain, but I think Cain is given a warning of sorts there that says there's something evil that's going to snatch you if you're not careful. And the next thing that Cain does is invite his brother to the field.
Yep.
I think the evil grabbed him right there.
Yep.
It's an interesting point because I haven't thought about this procedural obvious now that you say it, but this warning, if you will, is like saying, you know, this is what it means to be in the line of people who know good and evil. I mean, having been in the line of people who ate the apple, now you've got choices to make, you know? And this one's waiting for you, and this one's waiting for you. And now you got to think about that.
And maybe even using more of the word challenge than warning.
Yeah. To get control over your emotions. You know, if you think if I upset you just because I like one sacrifice better than your sacrifice, boy, do you have a lot to learn, Cain, here. The one thing that bothers me, though, just before this warning or challenge, is that God shows partiality here. Does God? Doesn't God, I mean?
Absolutely.
That God plays favorites here. Not like, oh, it's gone. But there was something near the last hour from Ted Peters' class about that God wants all children to be blessed or something like that. I think that, in fact, in Acts 11, it does say God shows no partiality. God shows no partiality. I don't think you can find that in the book of Genesis. Genesis is full of partiality, full of favorites. And I struggle with what that means. And I always say, is it the people's understanding of God that grows up? Does God grow up? Does God change? Do we change in our perceptions? All of the above? It's just fascinating, struggling questions. Yes?
How like us, though, to say because he liked his offering, he liked him. We make that jump.
Well, we make that jump, but it also says fairly clearly, and the Lord had regard for Abel and no regard for Cain. And
but maybe that's the writer making the jump too. Maybe it's, you know, the Lord had regard for one sacrifice and not the other.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily mean. But the writer decides that it meant.
That's true, especially if Abel means puff of air, nothing less.
Can you help us with the word regard?
Is that
where
phrase?
Does it come from? What's its original meaning?
I don't know that, but I can look that up and get that. Does anybody else know that?
No, I was going to ask the same
is
question.
Is there a footnote in any of your Bibles about the word regard? Because that is...
I have a different text that says look with favor on Abel and his offering, and on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor.
Favor, okay.
So, it fits a little bit more with the... what you were saying earlier.
The word in my Bible is respected.
Had respect for. Okay.
Darius,
yes.
I mean, if we think of the text and sort of the framework also of the myth of what did this writing help the people of Israel come to understand or embrace? What kind of truth was this story meant to place before the people?
Or
to be shared.
Excuse me, what, was that a question in there?
Well, I'm just.
what should I say back? Okay,
it's interesting if you look, I mean, as I look at sort of the ordering of the story,
mm-hmm.
what gets selected, what gets refined from all the different myth stories, let's say, over 3,000 years ago, and what gets collected and then put down, you know, and is finally sort of agreed to or becomes the scripture, that somehow imparts a level of truth or understanding about human relationship and human's relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we explain things like violence? How do we explain things like sibling violence? Didn't have those psychological terms then,
right.
Very new.
Right. And for one thing, like I said, I think I said yesterday, are these texts prescriptive or descriptive? And in this sense, you know, in almost every sense, and especially here, it describes. I mean, it's why do people die? It's the Zorba question. Why does anybody die? What's the use of your books? And so Abel and Cain and God and whoever wrote these words are trying to deal with this question. How did death come into this world? I would even like it a little better if a person would have died first
in for quote natural causes, but that's not the way it is.
I'm wanting to bring evolutionary theory into this, and where the bridge happened between ape and man, and what of the gene pool of the ape is brought into as far as experience and instincts and all of that, how that plays out in this story.
You can bring it in all you want. I'll yield to you and Ted Peters.
Darth, before you mentioned a little earlier, I think a God who shows partiality is very Jewish. I don't think Jews have any problem with a God who shows favors. And I also, when you say it's not Lutheran, I assume you even started with the pietistic Lutheranism. I mean, it is very Lutheran to say Deus is Godus. I mean, God's out of control. We've got no clue what God does or why. And we have to let God be God. I think it's very Jewish. God shows partiality, but I personally don't have any problem with it, the fact that God says, yeah, I like what you have, Abel, but not like you have, Cain, deal with it. I go to my wife when I do something good, and she says, what do you want me to do with this? Give you approval. And she said, your mom's going to give you approval. I don't do that. If you did well, what do you need me to tell you that for? You know, that's what I hear God say to Cain.
You have a wife just like mine.
This is my wife over here.
But my point is, you know, just because God says that's not what I want, or that's not my approval, I think he says to Cain, but what's your problem? If you did well, just because I didn't accept it doesn't mean you didn't do well, you know, what do you need my approval for? You know, where's your stamina? Where's your sense of pride in what you did? So I didn't pick you. You know,
for the reason it's on the board up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a wonderful interpretation, but it doesn't say that. I think that's the value of the discussion. You know, that
sure.
These stories, you know, got all kinds of things.
And that's why the Book of Genesis is such a lively book, because it's so full of such good stories. That there's no right or wrong answer, you know, and who's evolving here? Is God evolving? Are we evolving? Is our conception of it all evolving? It's marvelous, frustrating stuff. And Walter Brueggemann, I think in one of the tapes, we might have already heard it, says that we could have a different God. You could have a different story. But this is the only story the Bible has. This is our story. We're stuck with it.
Yes.
You know, what we make of it is okay, but let's not try to change the story here. It's our book, and we can't. In fact, he says, I can't change it. It's not that I want it. It's not that I like it. But
it's ours.
The story. It's our life. We live in this illusion that life is supposed to be something different than it is. And Genesis tells us that the person who is good, the person who is moral, the person who is upright, all too often gets killed. I don't like that at all. Why does bad things happen to good people?
One of the things that we ignore in that whole thing is that if you look at everything on earth, there is birth, life, death, and rebirth. And life is a cycle that continues. But I think we as human beings tend to say, well, we're different than anything else. So we ask the question, why do we die? When if we looked at everything else, it's part of the cycle. And it's not the end.
It's not bad.
Mm-hmm. That is.
And you can't have the cycle without death.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, and if the cycle is good, you know, if life is good, then death is not bad.
Or, whether it's good or bad, Brueggemann says, it's what is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make it good or bad, and that's your choice. Did you have a guess?
Well, I was just thinking about
No.
I'd like to make an argument that God is not punishing Cain at all. He's doing some social planning. It says, look, here is a type that's incompatible with other types.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm going to make a set of social planning steps here that puts you in a different category. Where, incidentally, Cain, you will be tremendously productive. You're going to turn out to be the man who teaches people to live in cities and groups. You're going to give rise to the arts, music, and so forth. You've got a very productive life ahead of you, Cain. It may not be what you had in mind, but it's the best thing. I try to reinforce my argument now by saying God is saying this is social planning. Cain doesn't like it, incidentally, but that's beside the point for the moment. When God issues an order, and that order is disobeyed, an order which is understandable to the person who's to be governed by it, he turns out to be a terribly vengeful God. I put a mark on this man, you're not to go to bother him. Anybody that bothers Cain is going to answer to me sevenfold. Boy, I'll put you on the rack and I will really work you over. Now that's God as judge.
Except that mark could also be one of protection.
Well, the mark is protection.
Absolutely.
And if you look at the parallel between the expulsion of Adam and Eve from the garden yesterday, where God gave the protective clothing for East of Eden to survive, now when you go to the land of Nod, what does God do? God gives a protective mark. But the protective mark is a little bit like O.J. Simpson. Everybody knows, this is my bias, that OJ is guilty. But OJ can live. And Cain, what Cain doesn't like about that, or at least what Cain, I don't know if Cain doesn't like it, doesn't say it in there. Cain has to live with that guilt and mercy simultaneously, as I think we all live with guilt and mercy simultaneously. We are the same time saint and sinner. We are the same time condemned and forgiven. And it's just all in that muck, all that muck together. But I think I like what you said there.
Cain does go off grumbling.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, that's been too rough on me. I like what I'm doing. I'd just soon stay here and continue.
Yeah.
God says, better off this way.
Yeah. In fact, Cain throws himself at the mercy of the court. This punishment is too severe. Please reconsider this. I mean, if I go wandering around, I might die. Do you really? I thought you were a God about life, not death. I mean, I know I'm paraphrasing, or let's say expanding the text here. I know I killed somebody, but is that what you're about, God? And God says, no, I will put a mark on you to protect you. And then I'll come back sevenfold, so I don't know what that all means. If they killed, so you kill seven of their kids? But that's part of this prehistory mythology that is not all orderly and clean. But is life orderly and clean? Are the court systems today orderly and clean? Is there justice in the court systems today? Yes! Is there injustice in the court systems today? Yes! So what's new?
But that bargaining is a very important piece, and that's very Jewish also, very Old Testament. It's coming. Well, let's reconsider here, God. That's your plan, and here's my plan. Now let's hammer it out.
Yeah.
You know, and God sticks with his plan and says, okay, you get the mark too. And it won't go that far. And if you do it in parallel, it's interesting to do that with Eve, too. I mean, the Cain and the Eve characters are the interesting ones.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like, well, your planet, they don't eat of that, but my planet, they eat of that. You know, and then we go on from there. We hammer out a deal on
Yeah. It is the whole book, and most of you, and you're right, the divine bargaining that goes on is very, very fun to watch.
Still do it.
Yeah, the problem is it was Germans that I remember that argue with you, take you on, and we Americans sometimes feel like they're being disrespectful. And they are saying they are respecting you because you are worthy of arguing with.
New Yorkers say the same thing.
Yeah, and we bunch of Norwegians and Swedes and whatever else we are as Americans, we just kind of say, to respect me means to say yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And there's no life there, and there's that Jewish mentality that, you know, I can take on God.
If you have a God that shows no partiality, there's no life. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a God that says, sure, you're fine, I'm fine, you're okay, I'm okay, we're happy, you know, love Jesus, and, you know, that's all it's about. I mean, you've got no, but where's the
you might as well be able, just vapor, yeah. Puff
that's
of air.
That's why I love the musical Fiddler on the Roof. Fiddler on the Roof shows exactly what kind of God the Jews have.
Yeah.
If I was a rich man, I mean, you
yeah.
know,
yeah. Yeah.
discussing things with him.
Yep. Let's shift back a little bit. I think back, I don't know where we are, but verse 9. Verse 9 is the verse that almost everybody, if anybody can quote any verse from the Bible, this is one that they can quote besides probably John 3:16, whatever that is. I know that. Am I my brother's keeper? What do you think Cain means by that?
Take care of it.
How many of you are first born? Have any of you felt like you were your brother's or sister's keeper, or that there's expectations on you to care for that youngster who just couldn't get their act together?
It came out that way in discipline.
Yeah.
For responsibility.
Uh-huh. You had to be more responsible as the firstborn?
Yeah, but it came out in discipline. There was a quarrel going on. Like we did something wrong. But I, as a firstborn, I don't know if that happens to others, but I suspect it does. That the firstborn got more punishment than the other ones.
Because we're older.
Yes.
You're older.
The younger's also watching from the background and seeing what not what
behavior to talk. We were on a quicker learning curve.
Yeah, maybe justified there.
Well, and the parents might be changing in their behaviors between first and second too. They may learn a few things here too. But Cain here could mean you know, almost sarcastic. Am I my brother's keeper? It could be kind of a shrewd sort of way of diverting and trying to cover up, you know? I don't know where Abel is. Am I always supposed to know where my little brother is? Yes?
As the parent of young children, this strikes me as the absolutely typical caught doing wrong response. Which is, you know, with your hands in the cookie jar or whatever else, which is, you know, what dodge can I think of first to get out of this situation? Honesty in response to the to being caught is the last thing that young, immature folks come to. And so, you know, this is just a, oh, I don't know. I don't know where my brother is. I mean, that's the innocent shrug is what I see here. And it's the same thing that my daughters do.
It's like breaking the lamp and running and hiding. Here you break your brother or sister and you run and hide. Or you say, I don't know where he is. I don't know how he fell down.
Or this guy with his, you know, head down like this, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting to ask you a question from yesterday. What if Cain had said, you know, I got really mad and I killed him. I mean, I feel bad about that. I'm sure you do. There, over there. Hey, but I'm serious about that. For my kids, the few times they said, yeah, I know where the cat is, I kicked it to the closet, then your first response gets away from the anger of the child and says, well, let's go get the cat. You know, how come this happened? I mean, it just changed the dynamic of the relationship totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they did one up on the parent. I knew they lied. I mean, I know how to deal with that. But when they're honest, it's
Now, what would happen if Cain would have accepted the responsibility of the killing, of the murder, of the death, whatever we want to say it? Would that change the story?
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
Could be. But this is the story. That's our frustration there. Verse 10 comes along. What have you done? what went on here? What does it say? Your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from that ground. How do you think Cain might have felt when those words were uttered to him?
Shame.
Yeah, we're kind of back to shame. I would think I would be a little bit of a whimpering fool right at this time that my hand was caught in the cookie jar here. You know, this God actually can hear the pain. I wonder what God heard this day in 1945. When the bomb was dropped over Hiroshima. What have you done? And all the other evils and atrocities that have happened in this world. I think the Cain and Abel story survives not just because we know what we feel like when our brother or our sister attacks us or we attack them. But it has something about having, you know, our rage against other human beings or even against this world. And I think God comes back and asks, what have you done all too often? And then we see, you know, if we were going to do this trial, verses 9 and 10 would be kind of the investigation phase. And verses 11 and 12 are the sentencing phase. And here we see, I don't know if this happens, but does a judge ever get angry in the sentencing phase? Have you ever witnessed judges getting angry? God is fairly angry here, I think. It's not only Cain that has some angry impulses, but I think God does here too, if we look at 11 and 12 here too. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it will no longer yield to you its strength. Well, wait a minute. I'm a farmer. And you're telling me no matter what I do with this soil, I won't be able to get anything to grow? You're banishing me from my profession here. You're making me a fugitive. I will just have to wander around and discover how to make life livable some other way.
You know, in a way, it's really a story of empowerment and the results. You know,
but God does work in strange ways. Yeah.
Yeah, because I work with disabled people, you know, and they definitely have to make shifts, especially if it's an acquired disability. That's a very, you know, in certain ways of reading that, it's an uplifting story.
Yeah, it's the practicing tough love, so to speak. But there is tons of literature about, is this about sibling rivalry? Is it about anger and rage? Or is it about farmers and shepherds coming to grips with stuff, and is it the moving from the hunting agricultural society into the urban society, and it's all of that all mixed up together? Yes.
There's a second death here. Cain's old life dies right here with this pronouncement.
Mm-hmm.
And,
good.
It's a fate worse than death to him. You know,
at the moment, it is.
He still breathes,
uh-huh.
But everything about his past and everything that he was born and raised to be is now gone. So he pays.
Do you think it was a fair punishment?
Why look at it as punishment at all? God says, look, Cain, you chose the wrong profession.
Well, Cain says, my punishment is greater than I can bear.
Well,
Cain,
I know, says that. He says, I'm a farmer. And God says, no, you've got it wrong, Cain. You're a failure as a farmer. You're a non-stick. But if you will go into city management, if you'll go into the arts,
uh-huh.
you'll knock the socks off of them. And he does at the end of this chapter. Cain is tremendously successful. We would be immensely poorer if God hadn't shown him that he chose the wrong profession.
Yes.
On the other hand, Cain is being taken away the thing he loves, the thing he knows. I can see now that that would be like taking away the voice of a singer or the hands of an artist. I mean, to him, it's the same kind of loss that I mm-hmm. don't think I've appreciated before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is an incredible deal.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's a real irony that it was a blood sacrifice that he was jealous of that brought this upon him, and it's a blood sacrifice for the blood of his brother that brings this upon him. There's I think there's something very poetic there, but I'm quite grasping it.
And there's also, in the cultures too, there's a lot of children sacrifices going on in different places, and we'll get a little bit more into that when we get into Isaac. But the human sacrifice, and how is Abel a sacrifice? Now do you like this? Now will you accept my sacrifice? You know, that could have been his argument, probably. You know, here, you want meat? I'll give you meat. Scratch that. Delete that from tape. Oh, yes.
Maybe God is showing Cain that life is about growth. And he says, you've learned to be a farmer now, and you need to. And here's a different profession. If you're going to continue to be a farmer, then you're not going to grow anymore, and look at how tremendously he grows and benefits his posterity by having this change that he has to figure out.
Do you think any preacher has preached this text at all during the farm crises or during the time when there was mass migration off the family farm into the cities, as this is a sign of hope, a sign of grace? I've never heard a sermon on that, but you could make that case.
Sure.
You could make that case that there is, you know, nothing's coming from my work and my labor and my toil. Of course, then you could say, does that mean there's something wrong with me? And a lot of farmers were starting to feel it was something wrong with them versus a lot of other factors. But to realize it's nothing coming, then get out while you can and use your gifts other places. And in this case, is in the city, can be very, very rewarding.
Seems to me the only thing we know, I mean, that makes sense in one way, but it doesn't make, in one way, it makes no more sense than trying to preach gender issues off of Genesis 2. You know,
which I do too, by the way.
What we know is that the bottom line for God is one of blessing. Whether it was a punishment or social planning or whatever, what we know is God's final word is, we're going to go with this. I don't care what you did and who you are, we're going to go with this. And you're going to be protected in it. Just as in the Cain and Abel, the Adam and Eve stories. After all the punishment and the anger and the rage or whatever happens in the story, and whoever God is in all this, God finally settles down and says, okay, now I'll go ahead. I'm not so angry that I've made a total end here.
The blessing is that life will be sustained. Life will go on. And throughout all of this Genesis, that is the message. Yes?
Yeah, it goes, when you read the Old Testament, you always have to ask, where's the grace? And it's tougher to dig it out in the Old Testament, a lot of places. But in this one, where's God's grace for this? It's the continuation. It's taking that bad actor. I mean, he uses all the worst characters in the Old Testament.
People just like
and
us.
Makes good things happen. keeps the people of God going.
Yeah.
In some way. Yeah. And it's
not just life goes on ho hum. It's life goes on and progresses, and good things happen.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting from verse 17 on. It's just kind of like time collapses. Mm-hmm. It just starts, you're in warp speed here all of a sudden, you're whoosh,
where did all these people come from?
Right.
You know, what did all this stuff happen? It's just all of a sudden, and there you are. And he's successful. Cain is successful, you know? It's like we sometimes look at a part of our life and we really get really kind of worried and scared about who and what we're all about. But if you take the broad view, you see the hound of heaven that has been barking and guiding you, or hounding you, so to speak, all the way along. The frustration comes is that these cities get going and everything else gets going and everything is quote unquote hunky dory. There's music playing and there's bankers and bronze workers and all these other sorts of things. And then we get to tomorrow and we find out all this is so wicked. And if you want to see a killing field, if you think Hiroshima is bad, try the flood. That flood is not a story suitable for children. I can't believe how I don't know if your daycare center is called the Ark or not, but, or if you have these
no,
cute
Jacob's
little
ladder. How do you like that?
Huh? Jacob's ladder. Well, that's another one we'll get into. Yeah, but it's incredible how, you know, I collect Noah's Ark port pictures and things. You know, I have Noah's Ark from getting pictures of all these 2x2s, and then I have some, contrary to popular belief, church is not just for couples, you know, sort of thing. Or I have ones where all the plants are coming in. You know, what happened to all the plants? But that's getting ahead here. I think I will conclude by just saying, as we think and meditate upon this day in which violence, for right or wrong reasons, and there's a wild debate about that, was unleashed with the bomb in 1945, that has its beginnings in this story. And whenever we show a little bit of anger to our children, as I've been known to do, as I lose my temper, as my brother lost his temper with me lots of times, as I lost my temper with him, there's not a whole lot of difference here. I think the bottom line is I am Cain and I am Abel, and I am now God as far as a parent with my children in some sort of ways. And how do we learn from these experiences? And how do we grow from them? And it's a really messy mess. But having said that, why don't we go in peace and serve the Lord?
Thank you.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah, thanks be to God.